Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Simcha, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harab Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. And I just want to add, I left the name out for the Refuah Shlema, for the complete recovery list. I left the name of Dennis Shore out. I want to add that name as well. We have several subjects this week. One of them is the latest troubles of Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. The other is how the left-wing biased news media completely covers up the crimes of Joe Biden and his son, just like they did for the Clintons. They tried to cover up the Clinton crimes, and they did cover up the Clinton crimes. Everybody wound up focusing on the fact that Clinton committed adultery. That wasn't the issue. The issue was that Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary committed numerous crimes against the United States of America and the American people. But the bias of the media and how they lie to the American people, that's going to be another subject that we're going to go into. And we want to discuss Elizabeth Warren, because once again, she's caught telling a blatant lie, and she's never held accountable. Nobody holds her accountable for this. And that's why she's a very dangerous candidate. But first, I want to start out by saying that we're recording this program on October 6th, 2019. On October 6, 1973, there was a war initiated by Nazi Egypt and Nazi Syria against Israel. It was Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, on the Jewish calendar, when Jews were fasting and Jews were in the synagogues praying. And it was also the Jewish Sabbath. Yom Kippur fell on the Jewish Sabbath that particular year in 1973. So it was the Sabbath, it was Shabbat, and it was Yom Kippur. And Nazi Egypt and Nazi Syria, in a sneak attack on the Jewish holy day, marched their forces up to Israel's border and attacked Israeli forces with the intention of destroying the Jewish state. And you know, it's amazing how the Arab Muslim Nazis, when they commit these atrocious crimes and do this on the Jewish holy day, they get away with it. There's no outrage, there's nothing, they get away with it. Can you imagine if you had someone attacking Muslims on the beginning of the Ramadan or one of their holidays and attacking their mosques and doing something disrespectful to their religion? Can you imagine what the reaction would be? The hysterical reaction, not just from Muslims, but from all the Muslim defenders and Muslim apologists in the Western world. But Nazi Egypt and Nazi Syria attacked Israel in a war which claimed the lives of 2,700 young Jewish soldiers, brave young Jewish soldiers, Hashem Yikom Damam, may God avenge their blood. In a war where Israel was nearly destroyed, it was a miracle that Israel survived that war, because it was a surprise attack. Now, the Israeli government wasn't genuinely surprised. It's a long story. They weren't genuinely surprised. They knew an attack was coming, but they didn't want to call up the Israeli reserves and have Israel ready. They wanted it to look like it was a surprise and wanted to make sure that everybody knew that Israel was being attacked. It was the Arabs who were attacking Israel. It was the Arabs who started the war. It was the Arabs who were the aggressors. They wanted the whole world to know that because they thought that would engender sympathy for Israel. That was Golda Meir and Moshe Dayan and Abba Evin and all these traitors who were the leaders of Israel then. And of course, it didn't engender any sympathy. Nobody gave a damn about Israel being attacked or about the outrageousness of the Arabs marching on Israel's borders and attacking the Jewish state on the Jewish holy day when people were praying and fasting. Didn't outrage anybody. It didn't even outrage the Jews themselves, because the Jews themselves, we live in a generation and in times where the Jews themselves seem incapable of feeling any moral outrage or of feeling any desire to fight for justice anymore. The Jews, together with the whole Western world, are incapable now of being outraged, incapable of standing up for what's right. Now, when the United States had a surprise attack in Pearl Harbor in 1941, the American people were absolutely outraged, and the country instantly united. And throughout the rest of World War II, the country was completely united in the war effort. And there was no sympathy for Japan or Germany and for the Axis powers and for what they did to the United States in their surprise attack. Because the American people in 1941 were normal. Or at least more normal than the Jews. The Jews are so abnormal. The Jews are so incapable of feeling any desire for justice, any anger or outrage at evil, any desire to defeat evil and defeat injustice and stand up for what is right. It's horrific what has happened to the Jews in our generation and the Jews of Israel in our generation. Just horrific. And the fact that the Jews are so desperate, always begging the Arabs for negotiations, always begging for peace. The fact that the Jews are so desperate and giving away the land that they won in self-defense in the most just war possible, always wanting to give the land away back to those who tried to destroy them, who tried to commit genocide against them, who tried to commit a Holocaust against them. No anger. No desire for normal desire for revenge. And revenge is a holy concept and a good concept. Revenge against evil, to wipe out evil, is good and holy. We're not allowed to get revenge against our fellow Jews if our fellow Jews, let's say, do something that's not treasonous, not something like informing on us or committing treason, but if our fellow Jews do something petty or something wrong that's petty or insulting, there we're not allowed to get revenge. That's one of the commandments, one of the mitzvot in the Torah. But revenge against those who try to harm the Jewish people in any way, that is an obligation. That's an obligation. That was one of the first wars that the Jews were sworn to do against Amalek. The war against Amalek is an eternal war. We're required to get revenge against Amalek. And Midian, God commands Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses in the Sinai, to get revenge against Midian for what they did to the Jewish people. And we see revenge against the Egyptians. We see them being repaid, measure for measure, midah keneged midah, measure for measure, for what they did to the Jews in ancient Egypt. They wanted to murder all the Jewish firstborn. God killed. Murder is an unjust killing. He killed all the Egyptian firstborn because that's what they wanted to do to the Jews. Measure for measure, he struck back at them. But Jews, after 2,000 years of homelessness and statelessness and powerlessness and being the world's ultimate losers, the world's ultimate underdogs, had become so crazy and so self-hating and so lacking in basic self-respect and so lacking in basic concepts of a desire to exact justice and revenge against your enemies, the most brutal evil beasts that did the worst things to you, your family, your loved ones. The Jews are completely lacking in any capability. The Jews are the world's true Christians, because the Christian world does not really follow what it says in the Christian Bible, turn the other cheek and love your enemy. And the Christian world, on the contrary, the Christian world, the Christian Western world, has slaughtered far more people than all other people in the non-Christian world put together. The vast majority of people who've been murdered in wars over the years have been murdered by countries that profess to be Christian, that claim to be Christian. The world's only true turn the other cheek Christians, in quotes, are the Jews. They really do turn the other cheek. And not only that, they forgive their worst, most barbarous, most murderous enemies. Very, very sick. But anyway, on this day in 1973, The Arab Nazis attacked Israel, promising to exterminate the Jews again. And the Egyptian Nazi dictator who led the attack, Anwar el-Sadat, yimach shmo v'zichro, is today regarded as some sort of hero in Israel. Because he got Israel, he signed a treaty, which isn't worth the paper it's written on, to get Israel to give them the entire Sinai, which was 75% of all of Israel's land, and all of Israel's oil resources and all and mineral resources, just huge, massive giveaway, an insane giveaway that Menachem Begin and the Likud did in exchange for nothing. And because of that, he's the big Sadat, the Nazi, who spent 4 years in British prison for supporting Hitler during World War II and for supporting the Nazis, supporting Nazi Germany. Sadat supported Nazi Germany and praised Hitler and defended Hitler and loved Hitler his whole life. And he's a big hero with the Jews. He's a big hero among the Jews. In fact, when he came to Israel, he came with a tie with swastikas on his tie. And the Jews, you know, they thought, no, it can't be. It's probably some other, it means something else. I mean, it didn't mean anything else. Sadat, his whole life, worshipped Adolf Hitler and wanted to be the Arab Hitler. It's a miracle that a merciful God saves the Jews from themselves. What a miracle. What a miracle. What a crazy people. And we have to fight for the Jews, and we have to love the Jewish people. Even if not for the sake of this stupid generation, this crazy generation. Certainly because of prior generations of Jews who were righteous and Jews who did give their lives, and who were brave and noble and magnificent people, and future generations of Jews, because in the end the Jews are going to turn around and they're going to become a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests. The most impossible, stubborn of people will turn around and they will become a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests and will lead the world to redemption. That will yet happen. Now we have the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is facing they call it a shimua. It's really a pre-trial hearing. What happens is when you face an indictment in Israel, they give you a pre-trial hearing where your attorneys can come and present evidence to try to convince the attorney general not to file charges against you. And so now we're in the midst of that process for 4 days of pre-trial hearings where Netanyahu's 10 attorneys are appearing before the Attorney General of Israel in order to try to convince him not to file indictments against Netanyahu. It's not going to work. He's going to be indicted. There are four different sets of crimes, four different scandals and sets of crimes that they want to indict Netanyahu on. And so Israel is in the midst of all of this, and Netanyahu has a real problem because he wanted chasinut, he wanted to get immunity, he wanted the Knesset to confer immunity upon him. The Knesset's the Israeli parliament, but he doesn't have the votes for it. He couldn't get a majority. So he's in serious trouble, Netanyahu. He's in real serious trouble right now. I don't care about Netanyahu. He's an evil person and an immoral person, deserves whatever he gets. He is responsible for the murder of many, many innocent Jews. He's responsible for Iran coming close to getting nuclear bombs now, while he sits back, while that coward sat back and did nothing, even though the Israeli Air Force could have destroyed many times over Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, and he's just sitting back and allowing them to get the capability to perpetrate a nuclear holocaust, God forbid. I mean, the things Netanyahu has done, the horrible things he has done to the Jewish people, I have no pity on him. Or his evil, corrupt family. His whole family is corrupt. His wife, his kids, his sons, they're corrupt too. Corrupt to the core. But Israel is in trouble. Israel is in trouble. Because of Iran and the fact that they're coming close to getting nuclear bombs, because of the whole situation there, the whole mess that exists in Israel, it's a very dangerous time for Israel. And I want to say, because I've said a lot of things now knocking the Jews of this generation, they richly deserve it. I'm sorry, they deserve it. And if we're going to change, and if we're going to be a great people, and what we're destined to be, We've got to face the truth. We've got to look in the mirror and face the truth. We can't hide from the truth and pretend that we're something, that something else is going on, and live in a fantasy world. We have a very bad situation with the Jews of this generation, and it's been going on for a long time. But even having said that, there are good Jews. There are good Jews. There are decent Jews. There are sacrificing Jews. And then there are Jews who are not really bad people. They're just ignorant. They're appallingly ignorant. And they are our brothers and sisters, and we have to try to save them. We have an obligation to try to save them. Despite the fact that the Jewish leaders are not good people. The Jewish leaders are bad people, are rotten people, are evil people. But among average Jews, there is a certain percentage of the of those that are good, that are either good people, or if they're not good people right now, it's because of ignorance that they follow the wrong things, follow the wrong philosophy. And especially in Israel, there's a percentage of Jews, a reasonable percentage of Jews, who, if the truth was really brought to them on a regular basis, they would turn around right now. So that's the frustrating aspect of this, because we have to figure out a way to reach them on a regular basis, and that's not easy. I mean, we're, as you know, JTF does advertising to reach them, but that's one commercial, our average commercials are 60 seconds, 90 seconds. They see one of our commercials. How can that erase a lifetime of brainwashing? After they see our commercial, even if they like some of the things they saw in the commercial, as soon as the commercial's over, they see a million messages saying the exact opposite. So it's very, very hard to fight against that. And yet, we have an obligation to. We have an obligation to do everything we can, no matter what the odds seem to be, to bring the truth to the people of Israel. And someday, as I say on every program, someday the good guys are going to win. Hashem has promised us. Someday this situation is going to be turned around. The rabbis, Chazal, taught us what the sequence of events would be, that we would first return to the land of Israel, first restore our sovereignty in the land, that this would be the process, and eventually the Jews would wake up, but the Jews who return are not going to be righteous people, are not going to be the moral people, are not going to be moral people or righteous people or the good people that we want, bringing a message of morality and truth and justice to the world. But that process will eventually take place. Eventually they will turn around and they will wake up. That will eventually happen. So we've got to plant the seeds for that to happen. That's our job. That's our role. It's a tough uphill battle all the way, but it's the job that every single Jew is obligated to take part in, and every righteous Gentile as well, because the survival of the world is dependent upon what happens with Israel. Nothing is more important than what happens with Israel. Nothing. Unless you don't believe the Bible. If you don't believe the Bible, if you think God is not telling the truth in the Bible, then fine. But if you believe the Bible, then Israel is clearly the center of attention in that book. And Israel and the Jews are the center of attention, of God's attention. So Gentiles also, I mean, this is a battle for every human being, to wake the Jews up and to turn that situation around. And another great threat that Israel faces, aside from the fact that they have terrible leaders, corrupt leaders, and that they're facing dangerous enemies, aside from all of those very serious threats, existential threats that Israel faces, in about a year from now, we're going to have an American presidential election, and we could have an American president who starts pressuring Israel to commit suicide. Trump, by the way, is certainly no reliable friend of Israel. He can easily turn on Israel. He can turn on Israel in a second, in a split second, if he thinks it's in his interest, and he would do it in a split second. Look at how anxious he is to negotiate with Iran. He was willing to lift all the sanctions just to negotiate with Iran. Look at how desperately he sucks up to the North Korean Hitler, Kim, who murdered 2 million of his own people, 2 million men, women, and children, his own flesh and blood, his own people. He starves them to death. He tortures them to death. And Trump admires him and likes him and said that I like him. I get along with him. I like him. I mean, and you know, they just had negotiations, North Korea and the United States. North Korea said the negotiations were a complete failure. And Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and Donald Trump said, oh, no, that's not true. The negotiations were good. I mean, they're sucking up to these people. These people keep spitting at them and insulting them, and they keep sucking up to these to these barbarians that are running North Korea. Really, really horrific. But as bad as Trump is, and we face some real threats from Trump too. Trump is a threat. The danger that he can turn on Israel in a flash, that's a real threat, especially in a second term when he doesn't have to face the voters again. That's a real danger. And as bad as that danger is, look at the other side. Look at the Democrats. The left-wing news media, it's just amazing how the left-wing news media defends the Democrats no matter what they do. No matter what they do. Joe Biden and his son. They're worried about Trump making calls urging the Ukrainians to investigate Joe Biden and his son. Big deal. Big deal. And I'm no fan of Trump, but this is a joke. Biden and his son were trying to make huge amounts of money, a huge fortune, off of the fact that Biden was in charge of Ukrainian policy in the Obama administration as Obama's vice president, even though he forgot Obama's name. At a campaign event, he forgot the name of the president he served under for 8 years as vice president. Imagine if Trump had forgotten the name, had been in a situation like that. Imagine something comparable happening to Trump. The late night comedians, every night you would never hear the end of it. You'd never hear, I mean, this would be day and night you would hear this. Trump forgets the name of the president he served under, Barack Hussein Obama. And the media completely ignores it. It's not even a story. Now, Biden's son amazingly gets deeply invested and deeply involved with companies and gets big position, big executive positions in companies that are involved with Ukrainian energy industry, with the Ukrainian energy industry, so that he could immediately milk whatever deals are made between the United States and Ukraine. And so, of course, the Ukrainian company that Biden's son is involved with gets immediate monopoly access to the government because they want to get in good with Biden. They know the way the game is being played. This is the ultimate example of corruption. And the media keeps saying in every story about Joe Biden, over and over again, CNN, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, they all say in all their stories, they say, there is no proof that Joe or Bo Biden, I don't know if his name is Bo Biden, whatever is, I don't know which son it is, I don't know and I don't care. But that Joe Biden and his son, there is no proof that Joe Biden or his son were involved in anything illegal. No proof. Something they never say about Donald Trump, even though the proof against the Bidens is 1,000 times stronger than any proof against Donald Trump. It's worse than a double standard. These are people who are using their position as journalists to deliberately lie to the American people on a regular basis. Completely lie. Nothing you're seeing is being reported honestly. All lies. I mean, look at how they lied for the Clintons, Bill and Hillary Clinton. They made the big story, Monica Lewinsky, and the fact that Clinton committed adultery. As bad as that might be, that was nothing compared to the other things the Clintons did. First of all, Clinton raped women. He raped Juanita Broderick, and the media to this day has covered that up. If a woman like Juanita Broderick had come forward against Donald Trump with the evidence that Juanita Broderick has presented against Clinton, you would never hear the end of it. This would be the biggest story in American history. But it was against Bill Clinton, and so the media to this day, how many Americans have even heard of a Juanita Broderick? Or of the other women that were physically attacked and assaulted by this rapist, Bill Clinton? Media covers up. Hillary Clinton, I'm not even going to go into all of her scandals, okay? Because she, from point go, was the dirtiest and most foul person in American politics. And the media covered up for everything she did. Look at Bernie Sanders, suffers a heart attack. For 3 days, he lied to the media. They refused to say what they knew. It was a heart attack for 3 days already, and yet they claimed it was something else, that you know, that he's feeling better, and you know, that he had stents put in, he was you know, exhausted, he was tired from campaigning, he had stents put in, but he's feeling better, he's feeling so much better. 3 days they covered it up and lied, the Sanders campaign and Bernie Sanders, the socialist communist icon of the media. And there's no scandal about this? What if Trump had done this? You'd never hear the end of it. And Trump does lie. He lies a lot. But the media calls him on it. With Sanders. With Elizabeth Warren. With Hillary Clinton. With Barack Hussein Obama. You never hear Barack Hussein Obama claim that he never had anything to do with Louis Farrakhan. And then after the campaign, now pictures come out of him shaking hands and smiling with Farrakhan. Of course, he went to the Million Man March. That's like a white guy attending a Ku Klux Klan rally or a neo-Nazi rally. And the media, you never see the media expose this and say, hey, what is this? What the heck? Never. And they knew about all of this, the media. They covered it up. They ridiculed anyone like JTF when we were saying that Obama is a Farrakhan supporter and is a racist and anti-Semite. They said, oh, how ridiculous. How can you say something like that? Yeah. They ridiculed it, even though they knew it was true. And they ridiculed anybody who dared to tell the truth. And so now they cover up for Joe Biden and his son. The big story, and the Ukraine scandal is a big story. It's a story of how Joe Biden and his son were milking every single foreign government in order to get good deals for themselves and enrich their own family. And in China, Joe Biden and his son did this in China in 2013. I mean, in China, they really went overboard, doing everything they can to make sure that Biden's son would become as wealthy as possible as a result of the vice president's dealings with China. Same thing in China, same thing in Ukraine, and in God knows how many other countries. This is the ultimate definition of corruption. And the media keeps telling us, no, when it comes to the Bidens, there's no story there. The only story is the story involving Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump and Giuliani asked for an investigation into all of this. So what? So what? And now Elizabeth Warren. And by the way, I think we were right in JTF when we said that we think Elizabeth Warren is going to be the Democrat nominee. Now, we said this weeks ago when Biden had a big lead in the polls and when Warren was actually in third place in the polls. Joe Biden was in first place, Bernie Sanders was in second place, and Elizabeth Warren was in third place. And we said at the time, even though it was risky, but we said at the time, we think Warren is going to get the nomination in the end. And that may happen, may not happen, could be that we're proven wrong in the end. I don't know. We're not prophets. We're just evaluating things to the best of our ability by looking at what we see as reality on the ground. But that could change. Who knows? Maybe we're right. Maybe we're wrong. But we said a while back that we think that Warren is going to be the Democrat nominee. And now, according to the polls, she's the new front runner. She's leading in the polls. And her two main, basically, there are only three candidates that really have a front-runner status position in the polls. All the other candidates are way behind. There are only three candidates that were really up front now. They're really up front, the leaders of the pack, so to speak. One was Joe Biden. One was Elizabeth Warren. And the third one was Bernie Sanders. Now Bernie Sanders, with his heart attack, I don't think he's going to get the nomination. I don't think he has a chance at this point. After he had a heart attack now and he's in his late 70s, and I can't see it. I can't see it. I don't think people are going to go for him now. And the other candidate is Joe Biden, who I think is beginning to fall apart. I think his campaign is beginning to slip. Now, that doesn't mean Elizabeth Warren, now she's the only one left standing of the three big ones in the Democrat nomination campaign now. She's the only one left standing. That doesn't mean that she won't be seriously challenged, that someone from the bottom of the pack won't rise up now to give her a serious challenge, because what will probably happen now is somebody will become the candidate for those who don't want Elizabeth Warren to be the Democrat nominee. Those Democrats who want an alternative to her, want something else, they'll probably rally around somebody else. And so she'll still get challenged by somebody. Even if Sanders or Biden don't give her a serious challenge in the end, she's going to have a challenge from someone else. She's going to be challenged. We'll see what happens in the debate. There's going to be a debate coming up, and she, as the front runner now, is going to be a target. She's got a target on her back as the front runner, because if somebody wants to get the nomination, they got to go through her, and that means they got to bring her down in order to get the nomination. So you know she's going to be a target. And now we see what a pathological liar. She's also a corrupt, evil, pathological liar. This is, of course, we already know with the American Indian stuff when she committed fraud. She committed fraud on job applications, on admissions applications, committed fraud. I mean, this is a crime. She insisted she's an American Indian, knowing that according to affirmative action rules, that advances her, because in America, there is a institutionalized racist policy of discrimination against whites, against Asians, and especially against Jews, and especially in universities and colleges. And she knew that and understood that. So she claimed she was American Indian because she knew that that's a big affirmative action plus. And then finally, she was forced to take a test. And she took a test, and they, according to the test results, they found that she is 1,240th American Indian. 1,240th. 1,240th American Indian. Which means she's not at all. Because, that means, in other words, they're saying there's one tiny little chance that there might be something somewhere. We don't want to rule it out completely. But that's like saying she's 1,000,000th American Indian. In other words, she clearly isn't. All lies. And she gets away with it. And she gets away with that lying. I don't think Donald Trump will let her get away with it. I think he's going to go after her on that. But so far she's gotten away with it. And now she's caught in another big lie. She said that she was a teacher when she was 19 years old. She became a teacher, special eds teacher. And that the principal decided to fire her because she was visibly pregnant, quote unquote, visibly pregnant. And because she was visibly pregnant, the teacher was going to fire her. Now, of course, that's a big plus among the feminists and all the other, oh, look at this, just because she's pregnant, they're going to fire her, and they're no consideration and nothing, and look what happens to women on the workplace. And perfect, perfect story that she started telling. Now we have a video of her saying a completely different story, that she wanted to leave because she was pregnant, and that she wanted, and because she wanted to spend a couple of years at home because she was pregnant, and which goes against, by the way, the feminist narrative. She's not supposed to be. She wants to spend time with her kids at home. According to the feminazis, you're not allowed to spend time at home with your kids. You're supposed to be out there being a career woman. The best thing to do is to abort your baby, to go to Planned Parenthood and abort your baby. That's the best thing to do. But if you're not going to do that, then at least you put them in child care and you go out and you pursue your career. You're a career girl. But we now find out she's on a video admitting that she wanted to leave in order to spend a couple of years at home because she was pregnant. And because she also wanted after that to go back to school. She wanted to go back to school. And it wasn't really for her. You know, teaching special ed kids, this wasn't really for her. After she was insisted how much she loved the job. In her first story, she insisted she loved the job. But because she was visibly pregnant, they threw her out. They basically kicked her out. That was her first story. Second story, opposite completely. She wanted to go out. She wanted to spend a couple of years at home. And then she wanted to go back to school and get a degree. She didn't want to stay in the job. It wasn't really, she found it wasn't really for her. That's the latest video that she comes out on. It's the latest thing she says on the video. In other words, she completely lied. Just made things up and lied about her past in order to build a narrative that would get the support of the feminists and the other men haters, the people that, you know, the people that she wants to curry favor with that have such power in the Democrat Party and in left-wing circles. Look, you know, I speak about the Jews because my main concern is the Jewish people and the survival of Israel and the Jewish people. But because I'm a Jew and because I understand how important it is for the world. But look at America in general, how crazy this is. Polls show that Biden, Sanders, Warren all beat Donald Trump. The Fox News poll showed Biden beating Trump by 16 points. Now, Hillary Clinton was against Trump by 2 or 3 points in 2016. Just 2 or 3 points. According to the Fox News poll, not a leftist poll, the Fox News poll, Biden beats Trump by 16 points, 16% double-digit margin. That's a landslide margin. I mean, what do the American people want? They really want the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders version of America? This is what they really want? I mean, can people really be that crazy? They don't see what happens in places like Venezuela when you have socialism? They can't see, you know, you have a little social, just a touch of socialism in places like New York and California. Why do I say a touch of socialism? The city and state governments are socialist in New York and in California. But you still live within a country of 50 states and the federal government, and, you know, so it's not the complete socialism that you would have if you had a president of the United States and a national government promoting this. If a national government were promoting what de Blasio promotes in New York City, what Cuomo promotes in New York State, what they promote in Sacramento in California, if you had this being done on the national level by someone like Elizabeth Warren, you wouldn't have a recession, you'd have a depression. The country would face the danger of a collapse, a complete collapse. Socialism is a catastrophe. A complete catastrophe. The stock market would crash. Wealthy people would want to leave the United States for other countries, although it's hard to find another country because in Europe now they're all socialists. One of the reasons the United States is much more prosperous than Europe is because the United States is less socialist than Europe. People go, successful people go to places where there is more market freedom, where there is more competition, where there is more liberty. That's where successful people and innovative people and entrepreneurs go, inventors and creators and productive people and hardworking people. They don't want to live in the world of Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. They don't want to live there. And I'm not saying Massachusetts is not a beautiful state. It happens to be a beautiful state. Physically, it's a beautiful state. But the politics there is horrific. I think New York State, upstate New York, is beautiful. And there are beautiful parts of California. Beautiful. I mean, you go to the beaches in California and mountains. And there are beautiful parts of California physically. God created a beautiful world. We have a loving God that created a beautiful world for us. But people make it a miserable world. These crazy people make it a miserable world. You have these AOL and these crazy people saying now that we should give rent control and welfare benefits to illegal aliens. I mean, they make this a crazy world. They're not happy, by the way. New York is not socialist enough, even though New York spends maybe 3 times as much as Texas on the average school student, even though the education system in New York stinks. And most New York kids, most New York kids who graduate from high school probably have a hard time reading their diploma. I mean, it's a joke. If you know anything about the level of reading, the level of literacy, the level of intelligence It's a complete joke. And huge amounts of money are spent. And everything is unionized. Garbage men in New York with pension and benefits and everything make, many of them average $150,000 a year. Garbage men. And they need it. Because the rent and the houses and everything else in New York is so expensive, even though the quality of life is so much worse than it is in other states. And people are leaving New York and going to places where there are no taxes, where there's no local state income tax like Texas and Florida, Tennessee. Tennessee, you might have a local income tax, but the tax rate is very low in Tennessee. In places where there's very low taxation and where there's more freedom, that's where people gravitate to, even within the United States. People don't want to stay. California, by the way, has the most beautiful weather in America. Southern California, dry and warm and beautiful all year round. Beautiful. Unbelievably beautiful weather. It was almost like paradise on earth when Ronald Reagan was the governor of California in the 1960s, in the late 60s, early 70s. He was the governor of California for 8 years, and it was a beautiful state. Now, productive people, working class people, businessmen are fleeing in droves. Some are fleeing across the border to Nevada. Some are fleeing to Texas and Florida and everywhere else where they anywhere to escape. It's a nightmare. Why would you want the New York de Blasio model of America, and that's on a national level? If de Blasio does it in New York, on a national level, it'll be 1,000 times worse on a national level, because the national government has such tremendous powers. If de Blasio can make New York a miserable place with his communist policies in New York City, and the communist policies in Albany and in Sacramento can make New York and California states where hundreds of thousands of people want to flee. And by the way, the hundreds of thousands of flee, the population is basically remaining stable because hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens are coming in because they get all the benefits. Those are going to be very productive states in the future, and even now. And this is what we want to put. We want to make the whole country like this. We want to do to the whole country what de Blasio does to New York City. This is what we want to do to the whole country? That's what Elizabeth Warren in the White House would mean. She is Bill de Blasio in the White House, 1,000 times more pernicious and 1,000 times more destructive than de Blasio is in New York City. Completely insane. Anyway, we're going to make the argument in the election next year, and we'll see how well it works. And I don't know, I'm not absolutely sure that Warren will get the nomination, but my guess is that she will. And, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. The media will cover up for her just like they did for Bill Clinton, just like they did for Barack Hussein Obama, just like they do for Bernie Sanders when he has a heart attack for 3 days. They make it sound like he just had a stomach ache. I mean, just, you know, come on. We are not getting the truth here. We're getting nonstop brainwashing and propaganda. We're not getting the truth here. We're going to do the best we can to try to bring the truth to people. And we're doing that in Israel now. We're trying to bring the truth to the Jews of Israel right now. That's what our budget goes for. When we spend money and for our budgeting, that goes only to advertising involving the Jews of Israel. We do not do advertising outside of Israel. But for our free video campaign, that we will run an extensive campaign in the presidential campaign next year, God willing. That we intend to do, because a lot is at stake in this election. That's where we stand now. And just remember one thing. If I had told you 100 years ago, in the year 1919, that the Jews were going to return to Israel and have a Jewish state, and the Jews were going to win wars where they're outnumbered 100 to 1. and the Jews were going to win wars in 6 days, and Israel was going to quadruple in size in just 6 days. And the Jews were going to turn the deserts into gardens and make Israel the most magnificent, beautiful place. And Israel would become the tech center of the world, even though Israel's a socialist country, but because of Jewish brains, it's still a technical giant in the world, on the world economy for its size. It's a nation of 6 million Jews. I mean, the amount of tech inventions and things that it's just incredible what comes out of there because of Jewish brains. But if I had told you all of these things were going to happen 100 years ago, 200, certainly 200 or 300 years ago, you would have said I was crazy. And people who did predict those, that there would be a Jewish state and a Jewish army and so on, they were called crazy. I saw in my own lifetime how many people called me crazy and Rabbi Kahana crazy when we said we were going to free the Soviet Jews. They said, never can happen. The Soviets will never let them out. There's no way. You're fighting against a superpower. What's wrong with you? Don't you realize? They thought we were crazy. You're going to be able to change things. What are you, crazy? And even when we were on the front pages of the newspapers and became the big, and in the days when people read the newspapers, now no, because of the internet, nobody reads newspapers, but in those days, people read the newspapers, and we were on the front pages of all the newspapers and and huge story on television in those days. And began to threaten Soviet-American relations, and it was clear that we were having a tremendous impact. Even then, people said, all right, but you're not going to get them all out. You're not going to open the doors completely for them. That's impossible. What will you settle for? They used to say to Rabbi Kahana. And he said, I want every Jew to have the right to leave. I want every Jew who wants to leave out. Every Jew who wants to go to Israel, I want to make sure that he can do so. People said, you're not being reasonable, you're not being realistic, that just can't happen. It's just not going to happen in the real world. I've seen in my lifetime, and I'm going to be 63 years old, God willing, I've seen in my lifetime miracles that are so astounding. We're going to see a lot more, until the final redemption comes. Everything that God promised is going to come true. Everything is going to come true. And that means in the end, there'll be good things. But until we get there, oh boy, can we have some rough times. And that's what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to get there without people being tortured and murdered and terrible tragedies and horrible bloodshed and just horrific nightmares. We're trying to prevent the nightmares. That's our mission. That's what we're trying to do as best we can. And if that's what you want to do too, you're in the right place. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.